Okay, we'll get started. Good afternoon. My name is Paul Arreer. I'm a program manager on the Library Experience team, part of the Visual Studio and Developer Division product teams. And this afternoon, I'll be talking to you about the Microsoft Help Viewer 1.0. This new Help Viewer is something that's brand new with Visual Studio 2010. And we'll be talking about how you can use it and how it's being used in 2010 in help integration. So just a brief overview of our agenda. We have an overview of help systems in the past, some overview of the Help Viewer features, a demo of those features, some of the file types that are involved and the content requirements. And then we'll discuss some specifically Visual Studio 2010 help scenarios or experiences. So there's a partner content install experience, end user experience, content installation process, update and uninstall options for partner content. And then finally, we'll be talking a little bit about some future thinking around where we're going with this new help system. And again, there will also be a demo. There's some nice utilities that are out on the market now that are starting to help support some scenarios that will help you as you're trying to work through your integration. So a little background. This is a little bit about Microsoft Help technology timeline. So in 1990 to the present, there's been this system called WinHelp that was the first help engine that shipped with Windows 3.0. Before that, there wasn't really a common platform for help. That has remained till this day. There are still a number of companies that still leverage that. It uses RTF-based source files, and the ISV scenarios are fully supported. So meaning if you were just a common Windows developer trying to support the Windows platform, you could leverage that help system for your applications. From 1997 to the present, there's HTML Help 1.x, or commonly known as CHUM files. That was an HTML-based replacement for WinHelp. Obviously, you never quite fully replaced WinHelp, but it's the next leg up in the internet era. And originally shipped standalone, but was rolled into Windows since around Windows 98, or as I was talking with Peter earlier, perhaps it was Windows 2000. And it's still the only option really out there for ISVs. So if you were, again, shipping an application that was just for Windows users, the CHM format was basically the only thing that's available for you still to this day. Then from 2001 to the present, we shipped a new help system called Help 2.x, and that shipped with Visual Studio 2002. It was initially intended to be a complete update to the HTML Help 1.x file, but as things kind of went on and the Vista program got started, we were beginning to try to figure out what was the best thing to do. And so rather than shipping Help 2.x as a new platform in the 2002-2003 timeframe and then replace it entirely with yet another one in the 2005 original Vista timeframe, it was decided to pull that. And so it's only been used in the Visual Studio scenarios since then. So ISVs were never able to use that. Then from 2006 to the present, again, talking about Vista, the Assistance Platform 1.0 was developed. And Assistance Platform 1.0, most of you probably haven't heard of that one, but it's just branched off of the Help 2.x code base. It's restricted entirely to Vista use for OEMs that ship with Vista. And it, too, was never made available for ISV scenarios. So that brings us up to the present, where we're still in this situation where there is the HTML Help 1.x, CHM files out there, HLP files. That's a technology that's over 12 years old now, and it's long overdue for updating, not only for Visual Studio, but also for the rest of the market. So we've been looking at trying to develop a nice, lightweight, standards-based help system, and this is our first attempt at it, and it's a 1.0 version. It's standards-based. It uses XHTML, ZIP, and CAB formats. It ships with Visual Studio 2010, so if you've downloaded Beta 2 today, you're going to see the first public release of that. And it's browser agnostic, so it's designed to use whatever your default browser is, your default web browser. So again, back on Help 2.x feedback, we heard so much bad feedback about that system, things like it's much slower, this doesn't always find things, it's the worst thing I've ever seen, document not found errors, or you get the wrong topic. We just had enough feedback that we felt like we needed to do something drastic and hopefully efficient to get you to the right content. And I don't know if you kind of fully realize maybe the scope of the problem, but with the content that we ship for Visual Studio, we used to ship pretty much the entire MSDN library. And that library is upwards of 1 million topics. And so trying to do the right F1 lookup against that scale of content has always been a very challenging issue for us. So we have these mandates walking into Dev 10, or Visual Studio 2010. The help value proposition, help is so quick and easy, I can find the right answer on the first try. And again, you think that might be a simple task, but it's actually very, very difficult. But we want to make a system that was really robust and very optimized for the right experience. So we wanted to fix help and address customer dissatisfiers, improve the relevance of F1 in search, improve performance across the board, and alleviate install and setup problems. Most of you who have done integration in the past are very familiar that it could take upwards of a half an hour to integrate your content with Visual Studio content. And we've done quite a bit to solve that problem in Dev 10. And lastly, to do it with a simple solution. We want to use standard off-the-shelf technologies where possible and provide a flexible framework without sacrificing security or quality. So you probably have heard us talk for the last couple of years about Help 3. We're getting away from this name of Help 3. And basically, Help 3 kind of intimated that was a successor to Help 2 and almost maybe was an iteration of the same code base. In reality, this is a 1.0 product. And so we've rebranded it. We're just calling it Microsoft Help Viewer. That's shipping with Dev 10. And the Help Viewer is made up of these two primary components, a Help Library Manager, which is used for ripping content from CD, file share, or the cloud. It also generates runtime table of contents, keyword index, and search index for content cached locally. It also does things like lets you look for new and updated content online, and also to be able to interactively engage with your content to remove content. Then we also have this other main component, which is the Help Library Agent, and that services the specific protocol that we use with this new help system. And basically, it captures this MS-X help protocol call from any application that calls it. And initially, with Dev 10, it's Visual Studio. And it retrieves content either from the online or local cache based on what your user's default setting is. As we talk about the architecture for the Help Viewer, we've described it frequently as having a lot of similarities with media. And so I just want to highlight that with this slide. You see in the top, basically, the kind of experience that you usually experience with a Windows Media Player or a Zune client or iTunes, where you start with a music CD or you start with some content up on the internet somewhere, maybe Napster or some other third-party provider or even the Zune Marketplace. And basically, you have your application that then talks with those sources and pulls them into your local computer. And when it's doing that, it creates these MP3 files or creates a store of these MP3 files. And it also creates basically this metadata database of the artist and album and genre of your content. So it's never just files, right? There's always files plus some metadata. And there's always a specific context. So if you kind of translate this then to application help, you see that middle box there where we have Visual Studio IDE and Help Library Manager. Basically, we have this concept of a single user kind of context within an application, where you might have with your media player content a store that's user-based or computer-based. With application help, it's basically a store that's application-based. So in the future, you might have your own standalone application, and then it would have its own instance of Help Library Manager that it would run. And then you could, again, pull content from a disk or from the online store or from the cloud. And then it pulls down these files and basically creates a store that is unique to your application, and in this case, to the Visual Studio application. So those files we call MSHC files, which stands for Microsoft Help Content Files. And then basically a database of attributes about those files. So we have then a database that is like F keywords, the table of contents, search index, things of that nature. And that combination of files and the metadata about them we call a catalog. In addition, the way your application interacts with this help system It uses a standard query kind of protocol, which we're using. It's a proprietary protocol, but it's from it uses basically the regular web approach to doing things. So you start with your application. It issues this MS-XHelp query, and then that talks to the help library agent. Now, the help library agent is something that runs in the background, basically interprets these protocol requests and says, okay, is the user got his settings set to local content or to online content? If it's set to local content, that says, all right, I'm gonna parse this protocol query or this URL and basically then look into this local store and find the topic that matches this this query. If it's online, it does a similar thing and passes basically that protocol or that query up to the cloud and retrieves the content from the cloud. Then once it's got that content, it just hands it off basically to your default browser. And for finding new content or updates, again, we can start with Visual Studio IDE, and then it calls the Help Library Manager. The Help Library Manager is then run in this context of Visual Studio and says, okay, I'm talking about the content that is specific to Visual Studio. And then it can look online in the online store for new content online or some new updates. Or it can, again, look to disk and find that content on disk. And I have a little star here next to updates on disk. It's possible to do updating from disk today with this system, but there are some kind of manual tweaks that are required to make it happen. So we're generally, it's still a little bit of an issue with this initial release. And then once it's got those updates, again, it just adds them to your local store. Microsoft Help Viewer then has these following content features. So it has a variety of rendering scenarios. So in online, you may have seen some of the rebranding that was done. It was released today where we have now three different models for rendering, and I'll show you an example of that in a moment. We have a classic view, which is basically what you saw for 2008, where you have the deep tree table of contents and a pretty heavy topic on the right-hand side. Now we also have a lightweight view, which uses a limited amount of scripting and basically makes it a lot faster to load the content. And then for really bandwidth-constrained scenarios, we have a script-free version of content as well. Specifically, we've been hearing areas like in China where they have very low bandwidth. It could take up to 5 minutes to load a page from MSDN Online. So we needed to do some things to optimize for that. Then in offline, basically our default scenario for how your content and our content will be rendered, it uses the lightweight model, which is, again, basically very, very low amount of script and just enough controls to make the content usable. And we also have a self-branded option, which allows you to do some of your own CSS look and feel on your content. There's also the table of contents that's been redesigned, and search, and a tabbed syntax area and tabbed code sample area. And with that, I'll just go into a demo to show you these features. So starting with what we were talking about earlier today, that there was released this new look and feel. This is starting now the classic view of what we had in Visual Studio 2008. And again, whoops, and we can go back here. You see again the deep tree table of contents. I won't click on a topic, but you would see a very heavy page on the right-hand side. Now, we have this new feature here, the switch view, which would allow you to choose between classic, lightweight, and beta. Lightweight beta and script-free. Now, if you went to the lightweight beta, you'd see this look and feel. So you see on the left here, you have a very simple search box. Search is always present now. And you also have a very kind of streamlined table of contents, where it's more like a breadcrumb table of contents. You don't have the full deep tree expanding and collapsing nodes. Basically, you just kind of drill down to the area you want to get to. And then we have this related links section, which essentially is showing the nodes that are parallel to this, this one that's highlighted on top. So if I were to go to the development tools, see, let me actually just switch into this view. Let me beta. You see under development tools and languages, we have 2010 beta 2, 2008, 2005. And if I were to click now on beta 2, on 2010 beta 2, you'll then see the 2008 and 2005 become these related link sections. So that's how that area is populated. And then finally, the script-free view. Again, it's very light, and it basically uses a lot of the same metaphors that we were showing in the lightweight view, but there's just no scripts involved at this point. Now, as far as the help, help viewer demo, I'll show you a little bit here about the help library manager. So the help library manager allows us, again, to interact with our help content and for Visual Studio. So if you wanted to set the online or offline default as a user, you can do this either via the Visual Studio help menu. There's an option directly under the help menu that says choose online or offline, and it brings you into this dialog. And then you can select online or offline here, and that will then set up your default setting. Then if you wanted to check for updates on content you've already installed, you can click here, and it goes and checks on the web. And it'll say, okay, I see you've got these products with these books of documentation installed. And it shows you that there's an update available. So you can then go and click update, and it's going to pull down that updated content. Additionally, if you wanted to see if there's any new content that you haven't installed at all yet, you can click this Find Content Online. As you can see here, there's like the framework 3.5 and 4.0 content. There's Silverlight content and some additional VS books that weren't installed. So that's another way you can get new content that wasn't installed as part of your inbox experience and expand on your content. Find Content on Disk allows you to go and search for a third-party product or even some other separately downloaded content and basically pull that into your Visual Studio content experience. And then lastly, you can choose to add or remove content, which is very handy. Sometimes, you know, you've heard in the past, maybe your developers were trying to do something against a Windows API, and they kept on getting Windows CE APIs rather than Windows APIs. And so you can choose a little bit more closely here what content you have installed, and it will then restrict a little bit better how the disambiguity happens. Now, in the Help 3 content experience itself, you see then this is now offline content. And you'll see right up here immediately in the URL, maybe a little bit small for you, but if you look closely, it says http://127.0.0.1. Basically, this content is hosted via a local host mechanism on your box. And if you look further here, you see this MSX help method here, page, and ID. And basically, this is what happens after the protocol has been issued to the help library agent. It takes the protocol query, and it deconstructs it, and then performs a specific query against the local store. In this case, it's doing a lookup on a specific page using the system.io.binary reader string as the lookup keyword. And you can see then in our UI as well here, we have some new areas. We already talked about the TOC experience and the search experience a little bit. But in the topic itself, you'll see there's no longer the drop-down language check boxes that we used to have in 2008 and earlier. Now we've opted for this tab model where we have basically we are able to list all the different code languages that are supported in our documentation, Visual Basic, Visual C Sharp, C++, JScript, F Sharp. And what we do here is we take the content and we kind of segregate it, and then we tie it across everything else in the page as well. So if I click C Sharp here, for example, you'll see the C Sharp syntax. But not only that, you'll see also down below that in the examples section, it's also automatically switched to the C# sample for this code. And additionally, then if I switch even to Visual C++, again, we'll see Visual C++ specific data and syntax. But you also see here in this parameters area, we even switch the dot to the double colon for C++. So there's a mechanism that basically tracks what your language preference has been and implements that across the page. And you're able to leverage all that yourself in your own content as well. As we said, also, search is directly embedded in the UI now. And so I can just come in here and type system.string. And nothing happens. Oops. Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, this is the bane of presenters. I was just going to show you the search results. Basically, the search results shows up pretty much identical to if you go into, the lightweight view in MSDN Online, if I type it system string here. You'll see the Bing results. And basically, our formatting of our search results comes almost identical to this in the local help as well. So again, you can just click on it. And you'll see abstracts or the basic description string that shows up under the search hit when you get to that topic. Okay. So with this new help viewer, we have these file types. We have the MSHC file, which is a Microsoft Help content file. Our default format is XHTML for your source content. Those files are compiled into a zip file, which is PKZIP 2.0 compatible. And those files are then renamed as .mshc to make them explicitly associated with the Microsoft Help viewer. Then we also have an MSHI format. This is mostly something that is generated at runtime. For your content, you don't have to generate these yourselves. But we have used them also for our shipping purposes to be able to expedite content merging, sort of like the old CHI files or HXI files. And there's also MSHA files. The MSHA is a Microsoft Help asset file or a manifest of your MSHC files. And that's basically used as your setup definition file for your product. And we'll show a little example of what one of those looks like later. It's basically just very simple XML. And it points to the MSHC files that you have created for your content and gives it basically a name of that content to the Help Library Manager to display. And then finally, if you want your content to be able to be installed silently, the only way we are able to support that in a safe way is for you to sign your content. And so we use a CAB format for signing. And there's a link here to the Microsoft Cabinet SDK for that. So you just take your MSHC file and basically kind of zip it again or compress it again into a CAB file, digitally sign it, and then we're able to install those. Content requirements. Topics are required to be in XHTML. So this is a change from earlier versions of both HTML Help 1X and the Microsoft Help 2X. There's several good reasons for this. So number one, it allows for greater separation of content from rendering. That may cause a lot of headaches for your writers. Some writers like to think in the WYSIWYG writing mode. And there will be tools that will still support that. But on the whole, having your content separated from the rendering allows that content to be reused in a whole wide variety of scenarios. And you might think of, if you're at all familiar with XML, you might do an XPath lookup on some little subsection of content to perhaps do a glossary term entry. So you could have perhaps a link from a topic to display a little glossary pop-up, and that could be retrieved using XHTML and XML XPath queries. Topics must leverage a variety of MSHC specific attributes in order to enable a variety of features. So in help2.x, we used to have separate HXC files and HXT files and HXK files. And HXT was a table of contents file, and so you would define basically your hierarchy of your topics in HXT files. In help, in this help viewer for Visual Studio 2010, basically all your table of contents definition is done on the topics themselves, and we use attributes in order to do that, and I'll show an example of that as well. Multiple language support is facilitated with attributes, context-sensitive help, F1 support, etc. So now specifically on the content requirements, we require that content conform to XHTML 1.0 transitional or 2.0 basic schemas. But there's a restriction on linking currently. We're still exploring this, I think, in time for shipping for RTM. But the restriction we have currently is we are only able to link using the MS-X help protocol and using a topic ID value. So instead of just like using abc.htm as the link, you need to use the ID of the topic, which is specified in this Microsoft.help.id meta attribute. And you would just basically have a reference to that ID of the topic you want to link to. You then have a catalog disambiguation meta attribute, this topic locale attribute. This attribute is used to facilitate determining which topic to display. For example, if you have Japanese and English content in the same Visual Studio catalog, and the context is Japanese, but you have both an English and a Japanese version of a topic, this one will say, okay, we're in the Japanese catalog, show the Japanese version of that topic. We also then have a search indexing attribute, this locale attribute, and that's used for word breakers to determine how to do the full text search indexing on the content. Then there's a title attribute, which is used for the table of contents, what the show and the table of contents are also in the search results. And we have this branding support. This notion of branding is, again, back to enabling you to have your own custom rendering on your content, your own CSS or your own JavaScript. And so if you have this meta tag self-branded in your topics, then that basically cues us to allow you to do the rendering. Then we have these set of attributes which we're calling optional. They're only optional in the sense that you can get any of your content into the system, and any of that content can be searched if we just use those required attributes. But if you want to participate in the table of contents, then you have to use these additional attributes. For example, this TOC parent topic version. Again, we have scenarios where there's maybe some ambiguity between one version of the .NET framework and another. So we have .NET 3.5 and .NET 4.0 in the same Visual Studio catalog of content. They'll use the same topic IDs, but which one do we show? Well, we want to say, on the whole, show the Visual Studio 4.0 or Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4.0 topic, unless there's some very specific context that requires the other one. So that first one, parent topic version, allows you to control that. Then there's TOC parent, which we talked about earlier. That ID is basically what says, okay, for this current topic that I'm displaying, what is my parent? And then you define in your topic which other topic should be the parent topic in the table of contents via this attribute. And then similarly, for sibling topics in the table of contents structure, you have a TOC order attribute, which basically just defines that Z order. Then for F1 support, you use this Microsoft.help.f1 attribute and specify the keyword you want to use to hook up from your application or from your extension to call out to the help system. And the keywords, we had initially planned to ship with a keyword index feature that's no longer on the table for Visual Studio 2010. But we do still use keywords to help facilitate ranking in the search index. So if you have a bunch of keyword data on your topics from earlier versions of Visual Studio, it's still useful to carry them over into the Visual Studio 2010 content. And even if it may be useful still later on, if we get enough feedback that we need to implement an index control, well, then it's just easy for us to put it on top of your existing content. Then we have a package name attribute. This is basically what would the name of the MSHC file that this topic is going to live in. It's a convenience feature. It doesn't really have any functional feature in the system. Then we have a category attribute. This one, again, is used for some disambiguation purposes. This allows us to do some very specific disambiguation from the IDE. So if you have your content, if we have our content online and the user is using a very specific version of the framework, it can say, okay, the 3.5 framework is currently in context. When I call Mistion online, I'm going to call it and I'm going to pass 3.5. And then we're going to know to do the right thing, to do the right lookup. So it's sort of a filtering mechanism. And then finally, this description attribute is, again, what's used to give a little summary of what your topic is in the search results. So now to some Visual Studio 2010 specific help scenarios. You have two primary ones, basically integrated versus non-integrated, or integrated versus side-by-side or standalone help. And if you kind of align these to the Visual Studio integration modes, Visual Studio has a VS extension mode and the VS shell integrated mode and the VS shell isolated mode. Basically, the extension mode is just like if you have a plugin or a component that you're wanting to support help for. That mode lives exactly or entirely within the Visual Studio IDE experience. And so your content will then just live within the Visual Studio content. Your content will need to integrate with Visual Studio's content explicitly. Then in the VS Shell integrated mode, there is the scenario where you may be a language vendor. You may be shipping our IDE to support your language. But you also want to support the scenario where if a user also installs Microsoft's Visual Studio C++, then the two products will basically be fully integrated together. And you'll have, say, Fujitsu COBOL or Micro Focus COBOL side-by-side, again, with Visual Studio, C++. And again, really, it's just still the same experience. It's a Visual Studio content experience. So in that context, you're still just integrating your content, essentially, with Visual Studio content. Then in the side-by-side standalone scenario, this is where you're reusing the IDE for your own product. And basically, you want to completely brand it as your own product. And you don't want to have the user really interact with the notion of Microsoft or Visual Studio explicitly in any way. And so you want to have your content be fully scoped to your own scenario, and you want to be able to still leverage the Visual Studio help experience. So for that experience, we have the Help Viewer MSI. It's chained in with the Visual Studio IDE setup. You have to create your own documentation shortcuts and the Help Library Manager shortcut for your content. You're able to create your own branded content catalog, again, a separate content experience for your product. F1 query integration is optional. It's probably a given for most of you that you'd want to integrate F1, but it's not a requirement. And that's about it for that. There are some limitations to the integrated modes, and I'm just going to briefly talk about these. With earlier versions of Visual Studio, there was never really any support for the third parties for online scenarios. And unfortunately, that's still the case with this initial release for Help Viewer 1.0 and Visual Studio 2010. We have made some substantial headway towards trying to address those requirements. Unfortunately, we're just not going to be able to get them in time for 2010. So again, the Help Viewer is either online or offline by default. Partner content is currently by definition offline. So if you're integrating your content with Visual Studio, that's a local experience. So then the ramification of that is if the user has their experience set to online by default, your content is not going to be discoverable in the online context. We have enabled some other features that would, for example, be able to let you create a shortcut to your content from the Visual Studio IDE help menu, again, or you can create your own shortcut to local content from the start menu. All those features are still available. It's just in that online experience, you will not have, your content will not be discoverable. And then in the isolated shell mode, there's this minor other issue we have where currently the Help Library Manager only supports a single instance. So if for some reason your end user has Visual Studio open and they have your product open side by side and they happen to have the Help Library Manager for Visual Studio open and then they try to run Help Library Manager in the context of your application, what's going to happen is it's just going to bring the Visual Studio one up to the front and the user is going to be interacting in the Visual Studio context, not in, in your app's context. So it's just something to message to your users, if that's a common scenario, that they need to shut down the Help Library Manager from Visual Studio if they're going to interact with your application's Help Library. Partner content install experience. So both Visual Studio help scenarios that we just discussed share the same general user experience options. If the content is digitally signed in CAB files, the Help Library Manager can be called in silent mode or user prompt mode. Silent mode content will be silently integrated. If you try to use silent mode with unsigned packages, or if you use plain MSHC files, in other words, you don't wrap them in CAB files, but use the silent install switch, then there will be a graceful failure, but it will not integrate your content. There's the user prompt mode, which is what you see in the beta 2 today. When you go to install your content, if you go to install Visual Studio today and click the install documentation, you'll eventually see a dialogue that shows the books that are available to install and prompting the user to choose which books they want to integrate or they want to install, and then takes the user through that process, and basically that's what would happen for your content as well if you use the user prompt mode. If content is not digitally signed in CAB files, or in other words, you just ship plain MSHC files, then you should not use the silent mode. You should use the user prompt mode, and in that case, again, like we just said, it'll display the prompt to the user. So here's just a little look at the publishing pipeline we have. Today, there are a couple authoring solutions. Innovasis has had their Help Studio and Help Studio Lite and DocumentX. They're upgrading their tools, and they're hoping to have a beta out of the Help Studio and DocumentX tools out between beta 2 and RTM. And they'll also be continuing their Help Studio Lite product. Component 1 is also planning to ship an update to their tools in the January timeframe, I believe, that will also support the new Help Viewer. Sandcastle, some of you may be using Sandcastle to reflect over your assemblies. That's still sort of supported, and I'll talk about that in a moment. So you go from the authoring solution to the conversion solution. Again, if you're using Help Studio, you'll be able to import your HXS projects and output MSHC content. So that's a nice, fairly painless experience going that route. Component 1 Doc to Help will also, they currently are only planning for a CHUM to MSHC migration path at the moment. They are looking into trying to use, they use Sandcastle currently for their Help 2X support, but they don't have a solution for Sandcastle to the new viewer yet, and that's what they're hoping to work on in this January timeframe. Helpware, you may be familiar with the FAR tool set. They've had some really excellent utilities for Help 2 uses in the past. They've created an MSH migrate utility, and I'll give you a URL for that shortly. That's a pretty cool tool that will let you take HXS files directly. It'll decompile them, and it'll convert your HTML to XHTML compliance. It'll take your table content structure and map that into the topics to the right attributes. So he does a lot of the work for you to help you get on your way to the Help Viewer 1.0 compliance. Or you can, of course, roll your own. So if you're in your own custom system, maybe using Ditto or some other XML format for your content management, You can work to, again, emit the a version of XHTML that's compliant with the help viewer, and then just zip it up, and it should be good to go. And finally, again, we just use the standard zip and cab utilities. So that's all that's required in order to create these help files that we use in Dev 10. So then the partner content user experience in offline content context, partner content is seamlessly integrated with Microsoft content and can be interleaved throughout Microsoft's table of contents. I was showing you earlier that the table of contents parent attribute would allow you to specify what topic should be your topic's parent. You can also use Microsoft content for that same purpose. So if you wanted your content for whatever reason to show up somewhere deeper in the overall Visual Studio content hierarchy, you can use one of our topics and its topic ID as the parent for your topic, and then all your content can show up basically underneath that topic in the table of contents structure. However, for discoverability purposes, it's probably more common that you want your content to show up as a root level node or top level node. And so the way to accomplish that would be to set the TOC parent of your root topic to be -1. Currently, this is a little bit broken in the beta 2 release, but it will be fixed in time for the RC release. In the VS Shell integrated mode, if installed without standard Visual Studio SKU present, the content's fully scoped around your SKU's content. If the Visual Studio SKU is present, your content is merged with the existing Visual Studio catalog and presented as such. So again, this is that scenario where you might be shipping your own language and using the IDE, and then Visual Studio is installed later, then the content merges at that point. In the isolated shell scenario, you'll have your own catalog content in this context. Content, again, will be fully scoped around your own content. There won't be any overlap with Visual Studio's content. And online update and content discovery features can be completely disabled. So there is actually an install switch that will allow you to disable that. So the installation process looks like this. You create an MSHA file. And again, I'll show you an example of that shortly. It's a simple XML format. It defines the books you're installing, defines the relationship of your MSHC files to those books. You then instantiate the help library manager pointing to that MSHA file. And this is all done via command line, so you can basically execute this as part of your setup install experience. When installing for Visual Studio integrated mode, you specify the product, the version, and the locale of the Visual Studio catalog. So the product in this case is VS, the version is 100, and locale is ENUS, or depending if you're supporting other locales of Visual Studio. For installing your own isolated mode product, you would specify your own product identifier. It could be anything. It doesn't have to follow any specific naming convention. It's probably best to use a single word. You specify the version of your product and, again, a locale for your product. If you want to disable online features for your isolated mode scenario, again, you just specify this no online switch, and then that disables those features in the help library manager when run in the context of your application. And then the content integration can either be done in silent mode or user prompt mode. So we talked about this a little bit briefly earlier. Silent mode requires that you ship signed cab files, use the silent switch, and that local content store must have already been defined. So Visual Studio, in this context, Visual Studio is usually already installed. So you just need to specify the silent switch, make sure your content is signed, and it should just be good to go integrating with Visual Studio. And then with the user prompt mode, it will display, again, the find content on disk dialog in the help library manager, and it'll show your specific books of content to install. Updating and uninstall options for your content. There's currently no support for check for updates online or find content online for partner content. So we talked about that a little bit earlier. We haven't quite fully fleshed out the online scenario experiences for Dev 10. That should come online in an iteration or a future version of the product. Certainly the next one, I'm sure. Update scenarios are limited to uninstalling originally installed content using the remove content feature or the uninstall switch. and in providing user with a new set. So you can basically you can script all that. All these are able to be run through command line switches or through switches from your installer. You basically just say, okay, I want to install an update. As part of that, I'm just going to remove content, and then I'm going to install the new content. And then there's the manual approach, which you can also do just through the dialog itself. Okay, with that, I'm going to show a brief demo then of this migrate tool, which I think is pretty cool and hopefully should be of really good use for a number of you just making this first step out the door. So to start with, I'm just going to take an HXS file, and I can drag this then onto this place here, point to an HXC project file. So if you have all the source for your HXS project from earlier versions of Visual Studio, you can just point to the HXC for that project. Or if you've only got the HXS as an artifact, you can just even just use the HXS. And then you specify an output folder. So I'm just going to specify the same folder here. Drag it there. And then there are a number of options you can specify. So you can choose to overwrite the source. You know, as it's extracting the content from the HXS file, it can overwrite those files. It'll do some verbose reporting, comment out help to tags. So you might want to use the same content for help to and for the new viewer, so you can kind of maintain that source together. You can, again, specify to use your own branding. So that's going to insert that self-branded equals true attribute into the content. And then it'll also choose like which XHTML specification to be compliant with, and default locale, et cetera. So I'm just going to leave these options as is. I click Migrate, and it's going to create the folder if I don't already have it. And you see it's now extracted 250 files from the HXS file, then rips all the keyword files and the TOC file. It takes all that content, pushes the appropriate topics into the HTML source, now XHTML. And if I show an example of the XHTML that was generated, you'll see now that there is where there were these help to specific attributes. Let me give you a little bit higher font size. We now have them commented out, so you can keep, again, the artifacts of that data in your source. But now it's taken the keywords, for example, the F keyword is init data, and it's put it in this new help viewer 1.0 specific attribute, the F1 attribute. It's also taken the K keyword that was used for the K index and put it into the keywords attribute. And it's also done the hard work of doing the parsing of the table of contents. And if you don't already have some specific asset IDs defined for your content, it'll generate an asset ID or an ID for your topic, and then it'll just go ahead and again do all the right relational kind of work across your content to populate this TOC parent value. And it also, again, is also determining which sequence within the TOC to display your topic. So again, it does a lot of the hard work for you, and that's really cool. There's some other features in the tool here. It'll let you generate the MSHA file we were talking about. So I'll just take this and I'll add the file we just created. So this is the MSHC file, which is just a zip file renamed. I add it here, and here it's just some dummy text, Acme Corp for the vendor, Acme Library for the product, and the book name. If I say create manifest, it asks me where to create it. I save it, and then do I want to view it? So here's the simple XML format I was talking about earlier. For the MSHA file, basically it just defines the vendor, the locale, and the product, and the name. So if you're integrating specifically with Visual Studio, you'd want to use those values I was showing earlier, where the product would be VS, the locale would be ENUS. And then the package list, this is defining what MSHC files are making up your content. So again, we chose the MSHC file I just generated, and it puts a reference to that here, and you can just add any number of references to that. Now, using this MSHA file, I would be able to come in with the Help Library Manager, and I'll just do that real quickly. I'll show you what that user prompt UI looks like. So if I do find content on disk, I then get a point to this MSHA file, do next, and now you see Acme Library, Acme Book, and this add option. That would enable me then to click add and update, and there's some bugs with this current content, so I can't actually show you the integration of that content right now. But if I do the update, you'll see, first you'll see the proceed query. This is showing you this is not signed, so this is the prompt the user will see with unsigned content. I do yes, and this is where I was saying there are some issues. And then it would go to the completion dialog. In that context, then, your content would already be installed, and you'd be good to go. Now, one of the other useful utilities in this tool has a Help Library Manager interface, so you can play around with creating your shortcuts or what kind of syntax you'd need to use for your shortcut. You can launch Help Library Manager from this UI, trying those switches. You can specify no online content, silent mode, et cetera. So it's a nice kind of way for doing a little prototyping. And another really useful feature I found is this event log viewer. So anything that is showing or coming up as an exception or some problem in the Help Viewer system, we log events into the standard event log. But this tool will let you basically drive down right into just the ones that are specific to the Help Viewer and view those specific events. So it's just a nice way to get at that content really quickly. Then lastly, there's this Help Agent feature, which we didn't talk about that, but there is a little tray application that shows up when you go to call help with the protocol. The Help Agent gets launched. The operating system knows that this protocol is managed by the Help Library Agent, creates this little tray app, and then that passes the basically those protocol requests to the right store. And so you can launch this directly from here, which I could just do there. And now you see this little tray app shows up. Help listener started. That's going to change to be Help Library Agent. And then now you see, again, it's showing the 127.0.0.1 as the localhost area. Okay, so close up, some future thinking. We have greater extensibility plans. We definitely, we've heard for a very long time the need for greater online partner content integration. We need integration of your partner syntax blocks and your partner code samples. We've got some really good ideas of how to enable that finally, and that will definitely come online in a future version. We have plans for server-side upload of your partner content metadata. So as we start to flesh out this system, you'll be able to take any specific information about your content or about your APIs or your assemblies and be able to make that available to the Visual Studio community at large. And then we also have ideas of possible partner content hosting models, which we have to think about further. Some resources. We talked earlier about the help authoring tools and the conversion tools that are available. So Innovasis, again, we mentioned they're upgrading their suite of tools. Component One is as well. And I also just demonstrated that MSH migration tool. Some points of contact. Still the primary place on Visual Studio's or Microsoft's assets is the MSDN forum. We have a developer documentation and help system forum. We also have a Microsoft help specific alias. These are likely to change in the near future because we want to get rid of that Help3 branding. But you can use this Help3 at Microsoft.com or the VS HelpX aliases for now. We also have a blog that's going to be seeing more content soon with some deep dive information on different features of the system. Again, all these names are going to be moving from that Help3 nomenclature over to Microsoft Help Viewer. And finally, please contact me directly with any issues. And with that, we'll go to Q&A. Greg?
Quick question. As a language vendor, we distribute both as an add-in to Visual Studio normal versions, and we also have an integrated shell version. If we use it, I thought I heard you say that the integrated shell version will be just our content?
No. Okay, so the question is, you have both integrated and isolated shell experiences for your products.
We integrate into standard Visual Studio as well as shipping
your own product.
An integrated shell version. We don't have isolated. It's standard. It's regular integrated shell. If they install Visual Studio later, it'll get overwritten, et cetera.
Right.
So in that situation, our integrated shell, do we still get all the regular topics?
Yes. So for the general most common Visual Studio integration experience, which is whether it be a language vendor or a component vendor or a plugin vendor, extension vendor, directly in the Visual Studio context, full local integration is supported. Do you have a question, Craig?
So for Sandcastle, what support are you going to have for the new UI styles?
So the question is around support around Sandcastle. Sandcastle still is primarily oriented around the Help 2 output. We have had some updates to the code base for that internally to do a few of the Help Viewer 1.0 specific attributes. There's some things that are still specifically lacking, like the table of contents attributes. We're not driving that into the content yet from Sandcastle. We're starting to look at what our options are to try to help, especially third parties and vendors, support their content. Because we know that a lot of you are using Sandcastle. We know Component One has some real interest in doing this because that's their primary way of supporting their components today is using Sandcastle in their own experience. We're talking with them and perhaps with some other third parties. If you guys are interested, we may look at resourcing or funding some further development in Sandcastle. So partner content, we're saying partner content is offline. That's the requirement. And then you're asking if that's the case, if partner content is installed, does all content have to be offline? And are you referring then in this scenario that you may have your own content, but you're wanting to link to some Microsoft content that is not installed?
If I have Visual Studio installed with C Sharp help and it's on, and I have that set to be online, I then come along and install a component from a partner that says that has to be offline. Therefore, and I think the slide said to
yeah, so you're sort of asking, does the link or the query mechanism fall back sort of to online or fall up to online, if you want to think of it that way? It does not currently go up online. What it will do is it'll give you a 404 page with a specific link with the full query syntax that a user can then click on to get to that topic.
This isn't going to be good, is it?
No. But at least it's not... It's not completely. It's pretty broken, but it's not completely broken.
And that's not going to be fixed before GA.
It's not planned to be fixed at this point. Yeah.
So it's not going to wait for dev 12 or something.
No. I mean, this is definitely feedback we want and things we have to think through about how to do it correctly.
Okay. One more follow up. There was a send feedback link on some of the pages. I don't know if that was online only or offline as well.
That is through our branding package in the offline experience. It is offline as well. Yeah.
Okay. So does that apply to only Microsoft Help or to partners?
Currently, it's only Microsoft Help, but we definitely have had some feedback querying around either how to make that customizable for third parties or how to at least have your own, be able to support your own feedback link within your own content. So we definitely have to get an answer for you on that still. Right. I think we're actually out of time. Please feel free to come and talk to me directly, and we're also glad to support some one-on-one sessions later in the week.